Here we go.
Welcome to BP WrigleyCast, the Cubs podcast that looks at the game from both the analytical
That's good. Blah blah cast.
This is BP WrigleyCast. This is how we do it. And well, we're flubbing the entrance to the podcast, or at least I am. The Cubs have had no trouble since the last time we got together. Last week we talked a little bit about the Cubs, the angst surrounding the team and some of the difficulties they were having. Well, it's a new month. It's August. The Cubs are 6-0. They've scored 27 runs. They've allowed 9. All is well in Cubsdom. Welcome. I'm here with Isaac Bennett and Ryan Davis. No Joel Reese again today. Well, let's just start with that. The Cubs off to a great start here in August. Confidence seems to be back, and people are happy about the best record in baseball. Anything that you guys have noticed from this recent stretch, or is it just, you know, it's a good team expressing itself, and that's what's happening?
Well, I'd say that mainly they were not too happy with Ryan Davis basically pooing on them and calling them average or something like that, and dropping him in his power rankings and everything else. So
you're paraphrasing.
I am paraphrasing. It's to the best of my memory. This is what he said. But I don't know. It feels good because last Sunday we were sitting here talking and they were losing 6-2 or something like that. And it was a very depressing game. And of course they came back and had an amazing comeback that night after we talked. And I think we settled on that they were still a very competent team, and that if we judge them by their individual players, as I think you have to in a baseball team, that we still liked them. We still thought they'd be very good and the best team in the National League. And they haven't lost since. So I'm feeling great. What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, it's what I said last week is, in general, none of it concerns you in the long term because this team is going to win its division. It's going to be in the playoffs, and that's really where everything matters. But it still was a little concerning just from the fan standpoint of watching the team and thinking, man, they go through these kind of nasty slumps. And I think if you look at April, May, and August, they're 41-15, but June and July were 28-26. So, I mean,
those
teams are
prone. Months.
Yeah, October. Okay, teams are prone to, you know, streaks like that. But those are, it seems more pronounced with the Cubs this year. And overall, I'm not sure that really matters for anything. But I guess the major point is it's good to see them playing good baseball now with less than 2 months to go for October, and I guess they're getting healthy too, which means Jorge Soler's back and slugging .917 since he returned, and maybe they're gonna get playoff Soler a little early this year, and I guess it's all good things right now. I guess the major, if you wanted to call it a concern, that I would have would be an overcrowded roster. You have like 28 or 29 major league players. And once everybody's healthy, that could be an issue. But, you know, overall, I'm pretty happy with where the team is.
And so let's spend a little bit of time on, and specifically Soler, right? It was kind of a, I remember when I saw the box score, oh, all of a sudden Soler's name's in there. Oh, yeah, I almost forgot about him, especially with all the wins coming and so many guys that are producing at the major league level. So he's back. He DH'd. The DH is done, at least for the time being. What happens next? How does he fit in with Wilson Contreras doing so well playing left field and catching? Is there a spot for Soler as a spot starter / first bat off the bench kind of guy? Or what do you see here, Isaac?
Well, I guess I see a similar role as to what they felt he would be at the start of the year when Kyle Schwarber was still on the team, because I think Wilson Contreras is still your starter most days. He's definitely going to be better in left field. I think his bat is probably as good as Soler's right now. So I think you're going to see Soler maybe spell Hayward against tough lefties and get, you know, the occasional spot start in left when either Contreras is getting a day off or he's catching. So I think you'll see him in the lineup, but I don't think he's a regular, as Joe Maddon would say. I think that basically there are very few of those. I think that Russell, Rizzo, Bryant, and Fowler are regulars, and then I think the other guys are all going to see times when they get spelled because Hayward's bat just hasn't been good enough to be in there against lefties every time. So I think you're going to see Contreras, Soler, and Hayward all kind of rotate, like, at least occasionally.
Yeah, I was about to reiterate that and say, you know, you have an 11.5 game lead. I think the Cardinals last I saw were losing today, so it could be a 12 game lead. I would like to see some more rest for some of the regular players, and that might mean maybe you give Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant each one day off every week until the end of the season. I don't think that's unreasonable to do at this point. So if you give each of those guys a day off, maybe Ben Zobrist gets a day or two here and there. Addison Russell gets a day off. Javier Baez isn't starting every single day. You sit Fowler every once in a while. You put Hayward on the bench against lefties. Miguel Montero, you give 7 out of 7 days off.
But wait, that doesn't... Oh...
Whatever you have to do, I think you can get Soler 4 or 5 starts a week, I think. The other interesting thing is Contreras and Soler. I wanted to ask you guys this. Who is the better defensive left fielder at this moment?
I don't think it's close. I think it's Contreras.
I think so, too, which is so funny.
I think converted catcher is the better left fielder than the
a guy who never played left field in his career until Joe Madden, crazy wacky manager Joe Madden, Bill Nye throws him out in left, and
Bill Nye, that's good.
It just puts him out there, and I think he was rough in left field for like 2 or 3 days, and ever since then, sometimes his routes don't look great, but I think for the longest time I thought when people would say left field is the easiest of all the spots on a major league field, I thought, well, easy for you to say. But I want to say, like, StatCast had the route that Travis Wood took on that fly ball as like a 90 out of 100. And I was like, man, it really can't be that hard if Travis Wood can play that well.
Yeah, I just think that athletically, which is kind of strange if you look at their bodies, but athletically, Wilson Contreras is just a head and shoulders above him as far as mobility and just his ability to move in such a way that means that you can play above average, well, probably not above average yet, but at least have the tools to be an above average outfielder, and Soler doesn't do that. So I think that today I would easily take Contreras out there. And long term, if he plays out there a lot, I do think he can be at least an average left fielder.
What's interesting thing, the thing about Soler, I feel like, you know, we see him in these spurts where he goes for a bit and shows something, and then he gets hurt or he needs a break or he cools down, and it's like, I feel like you really are only going to get a fair amount of value out of him if he's playing a lot and he's getting his at bats and kind of getting into a rhythm. There's just nowhere for him to do that here, so that's why, you know, getting him a spot start here and there. I mean, we'll see how you know, what he can bring to the table in that kind of a role. And again, it's one of those things that, you know, if there's an injury and something happens, boom, there you go. You've got somebody that you can give those at bats to. But I don't know. We'll see what he can do on 3 or 4 starts a week here.
Yeah, and that, not to continue to harp on an old story, but that was always my thesis for trading him in the offseason, which is, yes, you see just unbelievable things that very few people on earth can do, but it just comes with so much negative, which is the inability to stay on the field, terrible defense, below average base running, and so I think the highlights...
He's got a great personality.
He does, yeah, absolutely.
He's got a beautiful smile.
He does have a beautiful... He's a beautiful man, I'm not saying that, but I just think that the highlights kind of cloud, actually, who he is as a baseball player, and I think we're seeing more of that this year. Look, I like 109 miles of exit velocity and a rocket home run, 3-run home run as well, but there's a few of those moments, and there's a lot of other moments that aren't as happy, so...
Well, we've kind of touched on the topic of the roster crunch and trying to squeeze time in for all these players. The one guy that, because of the fact that he has options, was sent back down to AAA was Tommy La Stella. So I think we're all kind of on the same boat in terms of the value he can bring to this team, coming off the bench, some of that versatility. Maybe not a whiz with a glove, but you don't need that from every player on your roster. You guys were in Iowa over the weekend, so Ryan, what do you want to tell us about just kind of him getting optioned down there and the fact that he's not on the roster now, he can't contribute now?
I think Isaac and I are in full agreement here that we don't want to over-speculate beyond what we know about Tommy La Stella. So this is, I'll say what we know about La Stella, and that is they sent him down despite the fact that he has an 846 OPS this year. He was very unhappy with that fact. He also was apparently earlier this year very unhappy with the length of his rehab stint when he was coming back. I think he got called up. Maybe it was when Fowler went on the DL, they called him back up, but they told him he was going to be down for a few days. He was down a few days and longer than that. That's something I've heard from more than one person. So there's history with him being unhappy with the Cubs about being sent down to the minors. He was given extra time because he didn't report. The Cubs have said it's of a personal nature why he's not with the AAA Iowa club. And that is as far as we really know, unless there's gaps I missed that Isaac can fill in. So I don't think we can totally say with 100% certainty that he doesn't have a family issue going on we just don't know about, but it certainly sounds like Tommy La Stella's throwing a fit and doesn't want to report based on what we know.
Yeah, and to make this clear, we are speculating on that, but what we do know and can report is that it is an excused absence. The team is allowing him to do it, so it's not like he is doing it without their permission. So he is permitted to be away from the team. However, we also have sources that would say that they are not happy about it. The top management of the Cubs is not happy about his absence and that they would highly prefer that he was in Iowa contributing to that team and staying fresh and keeping his timing going, which I think that's the biggest story here is the fact that Tommy La Stella is a piece that this Cubs team needs down the stretch. And he's currently at, what are we at, 9 days now where he hasn't played baseball, at least not in an organized fashion. And that does things to your timing, and this is having a real effect on the big league team and could have an effect down the stretch. So it's an excused absence. The top management isn't exactly happy about it. We don't know exactly the circumstances around it, but he's not playing organized baseball, and that's not good for the team. So, and I don't think it's good for Tommy La Stella's future with the club. I am speculating on that point, but I don't think it's good for his future on the club beyond this year, and it'll be very interesting to see what happens this offseason if they can make amends or whether this may be the end of La Stella's run as a Cub.
Yeah, I would even go as far as to say it's still possible he doesn't make it to the offseason. I would bet when August 1st or whatever it is now, August 1st at 3 o'clock, whatever time it starts, that when waiver deals started, that he was immediately put on waivers and has either gone through or a team has claimed him. And the Cubs are either working on a deal to try and move him out or have decided they can't get what they want for him. But I'm almost positive that the reason they excused his absence and have kept this as low-key as possible was the timing of it and the fact that they really need either to get something for him or get him back on the team with as little disruption as possible. I am leaning towards the idea that I don't think I'll see Tommy La Stella back with the Cubs again this year. But
Wow. But, yeah, I didn't actually know that you felt that strongly about it. I still think that he'll be on this team. They need him. I think they need his left-handed bat pretty bad, so I think everybody will swallow sort of their pride in the situation, and he'll be up. But I would say that I would lean towards, at least in the offseason, him being dealt, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But
I agree with that. And I'm sorry, I know, Carlos, you want to jump in here. I just wanted to clarify my comments on that. Mm-hmm. I think if they can move him, they will. Even if it's just for a AAA pitcher, they'll cut bait. And the reason I think that is because we don't think of Theo Epstein as like an egomaniac, but he does have an ego. He has shown it in things he's done and said in the past. He likes everyone to know he is the top dog, and I don't think he takes kindly to his players kind of showing him up like that. And it's not only bad for him and the organization, it's bad for the players in the Cubs clubhouse, it's bad for the players in the AAA Iowa Cubs clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of selfishness going on here. Again, totally speculating. We don't know that all for sure, but I just think that Theo won't take kindly to this, and he will send him out if he has to, and if they have a better option or an option they think is comparable to use as a left-handed pinch hitter in September, that they will go that route instead, just to, at the very least, send a message to Listel that his actions aren't okay.
Well, that brings me to my question, which was, if tomorrow, the playoffs started tomorrow, is he on the roster? I mean, and I don't mean it by, do you think this will happen? But I mean, do you want him on the roster?
Yeah, that's an easy yes, yeah. Right?
For the talent, sure.
Yeah, you've got to have his bat there. They need his left-handed bat. Usually your options are either going to be Montero or Coughlin. And Coughlin, I still think, can be useful. But Listel is your best bench bat most nights. So you need him there. But thankfully, it's only August, and we get some time to see this play out. But it's an unfortunate situation, and I don't want to be too critical until we know all of the facts. But I definitely think this could have been handled more professionally by Tommy Listel.
Well, and I think it's a good the point you brought up, Ryan, about Epstein and potentially not being happy with this and doing something about it. If they were to try to move him, he would I'm just guessing he would come out losing on the trade that they made to get him in exchange for Aroldis Vizcaino, who finally after years of waiting has gotten somewhat healthy the past couple seasons. I don't think you're going to get a pretty good major league bullpen arm that can strike guys out in exchange for what Tommy Listel has done so far. But, that'll be up to Epstein, I guess.
Haven't they already lost that deal? I mean, if we're just looking at it in black and white wins and win and lose, haven't they already lost that deal? I mean, Aroldis Vizcaino.
I guess a bullpen arm for a bench bat. That's a good point.
I mean, if you're looking at what his ceiling was, he's a very good closer. And a guy who strikes people out. He's a back end bullpen arm. That was his ceiling, right? So if they traded him for a guy like Listella, who's a good left handed bat, can't play very good defense. He's okay. He's just not exceptional. Can play second base, third base. Make contact at the plate. Not a ton of power. I mean, he's a guy that you can find other places. You'd pay more money for him on the free agent market. But I think the Cubs always knew if Vizcaino turned into the prospect they thought he was, the ceiling that he had, then they were always going to lose that deal. I think they were, somewhat concerned about the PED thing. Probably. I think Isaac, you talked about that, right?
Yeah, and this is actually, I was going to ask something I asked Ryan over the weekend, is whether or not they made that deal with the knowledge that perhaps he was doing, I'm talking to Vizcaino here, whether he was doing things that they knew they didn't like. Perhaps they had wind of his PED habits or something of that nature, and again, this is purely speculation, but I always wondered if they made that deal because they knew something about Vizcaino that they weren't really comfortable with or had heard rumors. So as far as your question of whether they lost that deal, I still believe in Tommy Listel's talent enough to say that I think his bat's good enough to still make that deal. Now, however, we're seeing another side of this, which is not exciting to see, but I don't lose any sleep over that deal. So as long as he can make amends with Theo and Jed and get back in good graces, I think that deal's fine, and I think he can still contribute to this team down the stretch.
Yeah, and to the final point I'll make on it is, you're right. Even if they did technically lose that deal, just because the player they gave up basically hit his ceiling, they as of today they have a dominating bullpen. And they have one of the deepest positional player major league rosters that I've seen ever. So I don't think there is really a true effect to winning or losing that deal, just because Listella is such a small overall impact on this team, and as a dominating reliever, Vizcaino would be too, just because he'd essentially be your seventh inning guy.
Well, yeah, and also, I mean, Listella, off the bench in 122 at-bats, he has a weighted run created this year of 128, and he's on base of 388. I think his TAV is like 305 or 302, sorry. So that's a quality bat. That's a really quality left-handed bat. So we definitely can't diminish what he's done on the field this year. He's been a very good major league hitter, and that's worth something. That's worth quite a bit, but obviously all of this is tainting that, and it's kind of giving us, unfortunately, another thing to talk about and something to talk about other than his on-field performance.
leave it to us on a night that Joel is not on the podcast to turn this obvious advantage of having such depth on this roster into, oh boy, look at all this badness that's happening to the team. which takes us to another guy that's at AAA coming back up, and that's Trevor Cahill. You know, they kind of picked him off the scrap heap last year, turned him into something useful. Who was going to, you know, be part of that whole plan to, you know, bring starters into the bullpen and have them kind of absorb a lot of innings? Trevor Cahill, what's his role going to be coming moving forward? You guys think?
Well, we talked to Cahill Sunday, I believe it was, after his start on Saturday night, and he was very forthcoming with us. We thank him for his time. He was forthcoming with us in telling us that he had been told openly by the front office that he was down in AAA to stretch out, and I think he started four times in AAA now, and he's looked fairly good while he's been there, and he told us that he was down there so he, at some point he could give the starters in the major leagues rest, and we actually asked him later. He said, so you're the sixth starter, you know, in September. And he backed off a bit at that point. And he said, well, we don't know yet. But, I'm, you know, he had already said we're here to give the guys rest. So the other thing that he pointed out, which I thought was a good point, was that the way this roster was constructed was with four sort of super utility pitchers between Clayton Richard and Adam Warren and Travis Wood and Trevor Cahill, of course. And yet now Clayton Richard's no longer with the team. Adam Warren's no longer with the team. Travis Wood has become kind of the seventh inning specialist guy, not so much of a long man, though he is capable of it. And that kind of leaves the job to Trevor Cahill. So he suddenly is kind of the one long guy, one utility guy there. So even if they do stretch him back out and he's not the sixth man, which I think he will be in September, he can still be on the roster as that, you know, eat him up innings guy if somebody gets pulled in the fourth inning or something.
Yeah, I just to add on to all of what you said, that's basically what he told us, is that, yeah, he will be the sixth starter. I thought it was pretty interesting that he went that far to say it, because it does seem to me like maybe, I don't know how serious the knee injury was, but it was, what, knee tendonitis that he was put on the disabled list and almost immediately was down in Iowa on the rehab assignment and stretching out. So I'm almost curious if it was kind of a convenience play. We're going to put you on the disabled list in kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You're going to go there and stretch out.
He was just trying to show Tommy Listell how it's done. You get there fast. Right. You start playing games.
Yeah. Oh, no.
And we remember when Cahill signed in the offseason, it was kind of like he needed that opportunity to be a starter. That was part of the deal was they were going to let him try out to be a starter in spring training. He wanted a serious opportunity. So none of this is really that surprising to me that they would, you know, maybe he would be totally okay with it to have to go to AAA in the middle of the year just because it's going to get him an opportunity to, if nothing else, you know, show off in September four starts, show other teams around Major League Baseball that he could be an actual starting pitcher again.
Well, I'm curious to hear from you guys. Do you buy this? Because, you know, we heard at the beginning, before the season started, that this was going to be the strategy. We're going to use these pitchers so that Arrieta and Lester got, you know, either more rest or pitched fewer innings per start. That was the strategy from the beginning. We've talked about it here before, how that really hasn't played out so far. So now to hear, oh, yeah, now we're going to bring in this guy, and he's going to be potentially getting stretched out to be that sixth starter. I mean, do you A, buy it, and B, is it the timing they wanted to push it towards the second half of the season to get those guys at rest? I mean, what's going on here? Isaac?
I definitely buy it. I definitely buy it. I liked the original plan better where they had long men and had kind of come out and stated, even if they didn't say it with their words, they said it with the roster construction. They'd come out and said, we're going to have shorter outings, we're going to limit innings, we're going to save our horses for the postseason, and I loved that plan from the beginning. I think a couple things happened. One, Joe Maddon deviated from that plan, and two, I think that the guys that they had in that role weren't as effective as they possibly could have been, Adam Warren being the main piece there, but Clayton Richard wasn't very good. Adam Warren struggled. I would say Cahill was kind of middling, and at times he really struggled. Travis Wood is really the only one that's been somewhat consistent. So I think that changed their strategy away from the way it was originally constructed. And, you know, that happens in baseball. I don't think anybody's really to blame for that. But as it is, with their strategy change, and obviously the construction of their bullpen has completely changed, as to suddenly they're, you know, a power arm sort of a la the Royals bullpen, and that's changed, and that's fine, that's great, because it's now a dominant bullpen. But I still want to see the horses get rest down the stretch, especially if the division is over, which it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way to do that is to throw an extra guy out there for a sixth starter. So I'm actually thrilled to see it. I hope they follow through on it sooner rather than later. And I think working Trevor Cahill in is the perfect way to get Hendricks and Arrieta and Lester some extra rest.
Yeah, I totally buy it for all the same reasons. And I also think that we are just over 3 weeks before September roster expanding, so they're getting pretty close to the time where you can really give Madden that flexibility to use the bullpen and the rotation just kind of however he wants. You know, the days of seeing Jason Hamill pinch run for somebody are soon over. So I think it's really to their advantage to use their roster that way and to get some of these guys stretched down the stretch. And I also think it's underrated to talk about the idea that they could really start lining up the rotation however they want it to, and trying to give guys appropriate rest where you're not skipping a guy in a full, you know, 10-day span just to make sure you get him where you want him lined up in the postseason roster. So I think there's a lot that they can do juggling their pitchers around to make sure that however they want to line up the NLDS, whether it's Arrieta game one, Hendricks game two, then Lester three, Lackey four, whatever they're going to do with it, I think they can do it and make it work in an easy way where it kind of flows and it synchronizes well.
So let me, again, channel my inner Joel. We're pretty much... And I'm not going to do like a funny 60 seconds with a former Cub bit, sorry. But if we're talking about, you know, basically we've got the division, it's about getting these guys rest and setting things up for the playoffs. Is there a risk in kind of taking your foot off the gas as you go into the playoffs and kind of finish the season off, just getting guys rest and getting them primed to be at full strength for the playoffs versus, you know, getting into a tempo or, you know, like the Royals, it seems like every time they go into the playoffs, they're just like barely making it in and it's so exciting and they're riding all this, you know, momentum. Am I overthinking this or is there any, does any of this make you nervous to think that, oh, well, we're just going to strategically take the foot up the gas here and give this guy a rest or not, Ryan?
No, I don't really. I used to buy into that idea and think, well, it's always the team that's hottest going in. And what the example was the 2009 Rockies, was it, or the 07 Rockies? They just went on this like unprecedented tear where they won like 22 out of 23 games, and they were mathematically eliminated with their next loss for like 3 weeks or something crazy like that. And then they got into the playoffs in that playoff game, and then they rode that streak all the way to the World Series. Well, they also lost the World Series that year to the Red Sox. And there are so many examples of teams that were, you know, just like dead fish cold and went into the playoffs and won. The 2005 White Sox did that. The 2006 Cardinals did that. The 07 Red Sox, I don't remember if they were cold or hot, but they beat the hottest team in baseball. And there are just so many examples of that, where, you know, the hot team goes, the Cubs were the hot team last year, right? And they got swept in the NLCS. So I don't buy the you want to be the hot team going in, or the, you know, well, you rest your players and then you end up getting swept or whatever it might be. I just don't buy any of that anymore. I don't think there's any real evidence that says that happens. I wrote a piece not too long ago where I basically laid out the only way to actually have a better chance of winning the World Series. There's no, you know, you can't just be like, well, I'm not a wild card, so I can win the World Series. The only way to do it is just to make it as frequently as possible, because it seems like pretty much whatever you do, everybody has equal chances.
Yeah, and to your question, Carlos, it doesn't scare me nearly as much as having tired starting pitchers scares me, which the Cubs did last year. And yeah. You know, that's part of why I've been critical of Joe Maddon's habits of leaving his starter in too long, is because even Jake Arrieta openly admitted that he wore down you know, down the stretch. So I would say the momentum bit of this does not concern me as much as making sure those guys are rested. That's what I want to see. I want to see a rested club. Beyond that, I think it's a talented enough team to win the title, and it's just about, you know, the ball bouncing right. I mean, it's this team has the best chance of anybody in the game right now to win the title, and they just need to see it through. And, you know, a few things need to break their way. I think that's about all I can say.
I think you said it all there, that they do have the best chance to win the title, and my palm started sweating when you said that, but yeah, it's...
Oh, I know, it terrifies
me. I just have to go and do it.
I'm starting to lose sleep over it, I really am. I'm starting to have nights where I worry.
Yeah, I'm having those Joel moments, too, where I'm like, I know because I'm intelligent about it that if they don't win this year, it's okay, because... that's just sometimes how it happens, and that's why they're building up a team to win, you know, long term. But not everybody knows that. So I'm going to have to deal with people saying things like, oh, they were so close and then they choked. Or, oh, they, you know, I've had people say to me before, well, you know, they're such a good team, they better win it all this year. Or, you know, hope nothing goes wrong for them. Like, what? It's just so, so pedantic.
Yeah, people don't get it. People don't get being a Cubs fan. I'll tell you a story from this week where a Cardinals fan walked up to me, and it was Friday afternoon, and he said, oh, division's getting tight, huh? And I just kind of looked at him. He said, 5.5 games? I said, well, 9.5. He said, well, I don't have time to follow it every day. I said, well, that's fine. It went from 5.5 on close to 5.5 on Sunday to 9.5 on Friday, so you didn't miss much. He just looks at me and then says, how many titles? I said, two. He said, how long ago? I said, I don't know why we're talking about this. And that was just the end of the conversation.
You should have said, I don't have time to keep track of all these titles.
I know. But that's the life of a Cubs fan, is every conversation goes back to how long has it been? So hopefully before too much longer we can say, well, look at our clocks and see how many days have passed.
Well, with that, let's go into our question of the week, see what fans are requesting our brilliant knowledge on. Ryan, what do we got?
All right. Well, I do want to say we've been getting quite a bit more fan interaction lately,
yes!
which we really appreciate. So if you're listening and you follow us on Twitter or you occasionally send us an email, we
it's
love it.
Because we haven't had Joel on for 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's it. Even if we don't directly respond to your question, we do love the interaction. Please keep sending us questions. And we try and spread the love around to not just the same people every time. So this week we have Kyle, who asks, and this feeds right into what we were talking about, LaStella, why Coughlin over LaStella? And I will throw that to you first, Carlos, since you're our fearless leader. Tell us about Chris Coughlin.
Well, I mean, I guess my quick answer to that is options, right? You can take LaStella, send him down, and not expose him to waivers. But going beyond that, I don't know, maybe there's something to the fact that he was on this team last year when they had, you know, the year that they had last year. He's a veteran guy. And I'm always surprised every time I talk about LaStella, I just assume he's more veteran than he is. I don't know, something about his name just comes with, he feels like a veteran even though he isn't. It's something weird. When I remember I looked at his stats like a few months ago and I was like, wait, he just had one season with the Braves at the major league level when the Cubs got him. He just sounds older than he is.
full on goal mode. Full on goal.
This is all backed by analytics here.
It is odd. You're right. We don't throw him in with the young core, right?
Right.
He is 27. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, he's as old as Anthony Rizzo. By God.
Well, let's also not forget, you know, Chris Coughlin's numbers this year, horrible, right? At least with the A's, the season he was having was terrible. But the season he had last year, he was one of the most productive guys, you know, in that next tier other than the superstars on the team. And you know, we talked about his approach and how intelligent it was that he, you know, made that realization where he had to change his game and you know, go for slugging. And so maybe that's kind of the Chris Coughlin that is being given the chance to stay on the roster. It's somebody that can, we know what he can do. He's done it before. He can bring more pop than Tommy La Stella can. I mean, that's the best I can do on trying to defend that move.
Well, I think that I like your theory, but it comes down to one thing, and that's what you said, that Tommy La Stella had options. So essentially you had two choices. You could either keep La Stella on the roster and DFA Coughlin and lose him, or you could send down Tommy La Stella for 3 weeks and keep Coughlin on the roster, and then once September 1st comes and rosters expand, you get to keep them both. And then you get a full month of analyzing which player is the better bat for the postseason run and going from there. And if Chris Coughlin doesn't start hitting, he's not going to be on the postseason roster. It will be Tommy La Stella. However, 3 weeks of sending La Stella down for basically meaningless games at this point allows you 30 days to analyze both guys and see who you want for the postseason roster. It's as simple as that, and I'm pretty sure that everybody understands that except for maybe Tommy La Stella.
So, Isaac, what percentage, if you were going to put a percent on this, what percentage of this do you think was Joe Maddon? Because we've kind of heard before, he's if you're his guy, he's very loyal to you, and I think we've seen that with some of the players they brought through that were, you know, former players of his. Joel Peralta is a good example of that. So bringing him back and then essentially sending down a obviously better player to give him one last chance, how much of that do you think was Maddon?
I think Maddon was on board with it, but I don't think his influence had much to do with it. I think it's just a good common sense thing to do, is keep both guys around for nothing other than, you know, maybe making Tommy La Stella mad for a few weeks. Keep both guys around, let them both have a chance, and if Coughlin regains his 2015 form, then you might have a really valuable left-handed bat for the postseason. But I think they wanted to give Coughlin more at-bats to see if they could straighten him out or he could straighten himself out and see if he could become that. Yeah, he hasn't done it yet, but he's still got time. So as far as Maddon's role in it, I think that he probably was on board with it. But at the end of the day, if La Stella is still playing far superior to Chris Coughlin once October 1st rolls around, it's going to be Tommy La Stella from there.
One last question on this for either of you. Let's say Chris Coughlin goes all the way back to the way he performed last year. Not 2014, but what he did in 2015. And performs that way the rest of the way down the stretch. And let's forget what La Stella has done for a second, where he's essentially pouted about being sent down. Let's say they're both on even footing. Tommy La Stella, what we've seen from him, offensively, defensively, the whole package, and the best you can say about Chris Coughlin. Is there... If you look at it that way, is Coughlin edging out La Stella there, or is La Stella still better than he is?
That's a good question, and I think I think that they would probably keep Coughlin in that scenario. If he was hitting like he was when he was hitting third for this team last year, I can see them keeping Coughlin on the postseason roster for his experience and his power, as Carlos mentioned earlier. But he's got a long way to go to get to that point. I know you're asking a theoretical question. It's a great question. But he's got a long way to go to recover that, because he's basically got an entire year's worth of bad sample size here, at least two-thirds of a year's worth. So if he can recover to that and he has a really strong month of hitting, which is why they've kept him around, to see if that'll happen. But, yeah, I can see Coughlin edging out La Stella.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the way he hit, I mean, with power and some of that flexibility, I mean, he used to be a second baseman. He didn't play a ton of second base last year, but he could in a pinch. And besides, the Cubs have that position more than covered with several other guys. I think one other point that I think the value of La Stella last year seemed so much higher to this team because of the fact that we had so much swing and miss. And it's not that the team doesn't still have a lot of swing and miss, and having a contact guy like him just was like, oh, we need something like this off the bench to kind of, you know, alleviate all the strikeouts. But the strikeouts have gotten a little bit better this year all around. You know, we've seen Javi Baez, we've seen Addison Russell. So it feels like there's not as much urgency for that type of, you know, contact first guy. So I think that's maybe another reason. I mean, the options are the main reason, but then maybe that's another part of why they don't see him as vital to this team, because it's, oh my gosh, we need somebody who we can bring up to the plate who isn't going to strike out. Well, yeah, the team still has a lot of strikeouts, but it's not as much as last year. So maybe that's another thing to look at.
definitely could be. I think that's a good point. You know, the one consideration they're going to have to make as well is whether or not they feel like they need another infielder, and that may depend on the health of the infielders that they've got. But the outfield situation is going to be relatively crowded, with especially if Soler's back, because you've got Soler and Caesar and Contreras and Hayward and Fowler all trying to get time. So Coughlin may just simply be too redundant by that point. But you know, if I had to put money on it, I would definitely put money on Tommy La Stella being on the postseason roster. But I like the line of thought of, you know, if Coughlin regains form, does he have a chance to make it? I think the answer is yes.
I think it's time to bring back Ronnie Cedeno.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, full Nieske? On Joel. Full on Joel. That's what I have to say.
Joel, give us your 60 seconds with Ronnie Cedeno. How many times does he tell us about that home run he hit in Milwaukee?
It'd be like 10 seconds with Ronnie Cedeno.
Yeah.
That's what his girlfriend said anyway. No, okay, well, let's move right along here.
You beat me by
seconds.
I think
that's a perfect segue for at-bat of the week somehow. Isaac, make it work.
You know what? This at-bat of the week is going out to my good friend and longtime podcast partner, Carlos Portocarrero.
Oh, yes.
On Wednesday, August 3rd, the Cubs were trailing 4-2 going into the bottom of the eighth inning. Sorry, bottom of the ninth inning. Much more controversy, and I chewed all my nails off. But Miguel Montero led off with a double, and Javier Baez got him to third with a single. First and third, nobody out. Matt Caesar then worked a five-pitch walk, which I was tempted to use because that was a huge walk. But bases are loaded for Dexter Fowler, down 4-2. And Dexter Fowler, on a six-pitch, 3-2 count, lined a fly ball to right field, and it was caught, and everybody moved up a base, which is key because Matt Caesar made a great base running play to go from first to second base, and he would eventually come around and score the winning run. So it was an excellent at-bat by Dexter Fowler, putting the 3-2 pitch, which was an excellent pitch from A.J. Ramos, in play for a sacrifice fly, but an even better play by Matt Caesar to tag up going from first to second as the eventual winning run. So your at-bat of the week is Fowler, and your base runner of the week is Matt Caesar tagging up. And just for you, Carlos, I picked a sacrifice fly tonight.
Yay! No, that was a huge play by Caesar. I mean, I agree. When I saw the – I think I was watching that one on Gamecast or something, and I saw everybody move up, and I said, well, wait a minute. That's weird. And when I saw the replay – you know, granted it was a deep fly ball, but it wasn't that deep, and it was Stanton that caught it. So did he, I forget, did he like fake him out or something? Or he pretended like he just kind of started and stopped, and then he saw the throw, and he got to second?
No, I think Stanton was just surprised. He juggled the transfer a little bit, if I remember correctly, and I think that it just really surprised him that Caesar just took off, and he obviously has good speed, so he took a risk there, and he could have been thrown out, and we may be talking about how it was a dumb play, but instead it was heads up. He made it in, and it took Stanton by surprise and eventually came around to score the winning run on that wild pitch by Ramos. So I liked the aggressiveness a lot, and the fact that it worked made me like it even more. So all around, that was a very, very fun inning, and it was the second walk-off in 3 days. And it felt more like 2015 Cubs.
Yeah, actually, I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah, this whole week. And my friend Jeremy actually had told me Sunday, I think Sunday afternoon, maybe Saturday night, he had texted me and said, I really miss the walk-offs. I miss all the drama and the excitement and the rally buckets. I'm missing that. This year's just been kind of, I don't know exactly what he said. This year's been, it was almost boring by comparison to last year. I missed that. So then you had the dramatic comeback on Sunday night, then you had the dramatic walk-off on Wednesday, and it was just, it felt like 2015 vintage Cubs.
Yeah, it was a good time.
All right, so I've got slightly breaking news here. Cincinnati is up 4-0 on St. Louis. Cardinals have a runner on first in the bottom of the ninth and two outs.
I thought you were going to say, they found Tommy La Stella.
I did too. I thought
he showed up with a mustache.
Oh, I totally thought you were going La Stella on this. I immediately leaned forward, all excited.
No, I was going towards a division lead is what we're talking about here.
That was like a big sack fly play somewhere in the league.
Tommy Pham is up at the plate against Tony Cingrani, trailing by four runs. And one more out, the Cubs will be at 12.5 games.
Mmm, yummy. I like it when you talk to me that way.
I believe is the largest lead of the division, right?
Of the year?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think you're right. And the Cubs are at their high water mark as well right now, 27 over. So that's exciting. But yeah, I definitely thought you were going to go full on, like, you know, they found Tommy La Stella at the hometown buffet in Des Moines or something.
No. But I can tell you that FAM has a 3-0 count, and they've got a pitcher coming up next, so I'm sure Mike Matheny will just let the pitcher bat.
He just walked.
Yep. He did just walk. So here comes Zach Duke.
You know, Cingrani closing for that team or whatever this is right now, is that's pretty interesting. I can see him fitting there long term, actually.
He's a good left-handed pitcher.
Yeah, that dude has gotten a raw deal.
Yeah. I've always liked Cingrani as the pitcher.
Me too.
Well, all right, well, good stuff, guys. Well,
the Cubs have the Angels coming into town, so we'll get to see some Trout, some Pujols, and then the Cardinals for four. And don't forget, Friday is Cubs Fedora Day. So,
Joel will be there for sure.
Oh, yeah, he's already waiting outside the stadium right now.
Pujols and Fedoras.
Are you guys ready for this? Against Cingrani, Matt Carpenter now represents the tying run.
Oh, my. He just hit Colton Wong.
Yep. Oh, so here we go.
Everything will be fine.
Yeah, who knows?
We'll leave you on a cliffhanger, everybody.
All right, I want to do this. What are the odds that Carpenter hits a grand slam right now? What odds would you give me?
Is this over under again? Because if so, I'm out. Over the wall. All right, see ya.
In play runs. Good night, guys.